Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All parties having anything to do before the Honorable First Justice Beverly Pannoni, now sitting in the Dedham Superior Court within for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth and this good court. Thank you, dear Chief Court Counsel.
22-117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed. Can I have counsel identify themselves for the record?
Adam Lyle for the Commonwealth. Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Lyle.
Good morning, Your Honor. Laura McLaughlin for the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Mr. McLaughlin.
Good morning, again, Your Honor. Alan Jackson.
Good morning, Mr. Jackson.
Good morning, Your Honor. Elizabeth Little, also on behalf of Ms. Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Little.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Giannetti from Karen Reed.
Good morning, Ms. Giannetti. Good morning, Ms. Reed.
Good morning, jurors.
Good morning.
So I have those three questions for you. Is everyone able to follow the instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone since we left here last week?
Yes. Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instructions and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we were last in court?
No.
Everyone said no or should. Now, jurors, before we start, I do want to give you that instruction again on what is evidence. So in considering the testimony of any witness, remember that the questions that are asked are not evidence. Only the answers, which are really the only part of the exchange between the lawyers and the witnesses that are under oath, are evidence. So if a witness is asked, isn't it true that after you learned that your uncle left you money in his will, you poisoned him? And the witness answers no, then based solely on that question and answer, there's no evidence that the witness has an uncle, that the uncle had a will, that the uncle left the witness money, that the witness knew that the uncle left the witness money, or that the witness poisoned him. So keep that in mind for reference when you're listening to testimony. All right, Mr. Lally, who's your first witness?
Your Honor, the Commonwealth would call Lieutenant Kevin O'Hara to the stand.
Okay.
In case never gives you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
I do.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Good morning.
Forgive me, Your Honor.
Anytime you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, sir.
Morning, sir.
Could you please state your name and spell your last name for the jury?
It's Kevin O'Hara, O-H-A-R-A.
And how are you employed, sir?
I'm a lieutenant with the Massachusetts State Police.
And how long in total have you been a member of the state?
Just over 22 years.
And how long have you held the rank of lieutenant?
4.5 years.
And what is your current assignment within the Massachusetts State Police?
I'm the team commander for the State Police Special Emergency Response Team, which is also known as CERT.
And the CERT team within the State Police, approximately how many members of that unit are there?
We have 61 team members, 4 of which are full-time, including myself. The other 57 have other primary duty assignments, and CERT is an additional duty for them.
Now, generally speaking, what are sort of the duties and responsibilities, or what is the CERT unit within the State Police does?
CERT is the primary search and rescue team for the State Police. We conduct lost, missing person searches, evidence searches. We do security or crowd control at large-scale events such as the 4th of July, the Boston Marathon, Gillette Stadium, dignitary security.
And how long have you been assigned to that particular unit?
Since 2014.
Now, were you working with that unit on January 29th, 2020?
Yes, it was, sir.
And at some point in the afternoon on that day, were you contacted by Lieutenant Brian Tully of the state?
Yes, at 2:32 p.m., Lieutenant Tully gave me a phone call.
Now, as far as Lieutenant Tully is concerned, were you familiar with him, or were you familiar with what units he supervises?
Yes, I know he's the supervisor for the Norfolk County State Police Detective Unit.
Now, if you could, describe to the jury sort of the process by which your particular unit is activated. Is that an instantaneous thing, or how does that work?
Normally, we'll receive a courtesy phone call, which is what I received from Lieutenant Tully, seeing if we were available, if we had members that could respond today for an incident he had ongoing. I told him we would be available. He then has to submit a request through his chain of command, which is the Division of Investigative Services. I also have to submit a request up my chain of command, which is through field services, to get approval on my end. It has to be approved by the Special Operations Commander, which is a major. And depending on the request, it may even go above his level to the lieutenant colonel who is in charge of the Division of Field Services.
So that initial call that you received about 2:32 in the afternoon, how would you characterize that first call?
Again, I say it was more of a courtesy notification, just to make sure we weren't on another assignment, that we had members who could respond that day. Obviously, there was the weather issue that day, making sure members could respond to the scene.
And the weather issue that day, what kind of weather issue?
It was a blizzard. I think most areas had received between 18 to 20 inches of snow.
And as far as that initial phone call with Lieutenant Tully, as far as what was described to you, as far as the situation that you're responding to, or what, if anything, did he say about that?
He said they were conducting a death investigation in the town of Canton, and he was looking for assistance with an evidence search.
And how did you respond to that request that on that initial call?
I told him we would have members that would be able to respond and that I would start working on the approval process, looking out my own window. I hadn't been outside my house that day. I had large snow drifts at the end of my driveway. I told him building a roster and having members clear their driveway at least an hour plus on a response time.
And following that initial conversation, did Lieutenant Kelly reach back out to you at some point?
Yeah, I'm not positive if he called me or if I called him. I think after I'd cleared my driveway, I spoke to my captain just to make sure, see what the status was on the approval process on our end. He said we were cleared on our end. So either Lieutenant Tully called me or I may have called him because I was getting nervous that now that my driveway was cleared that the town plow was going to come back and bury the end of my driveway again. So I'm not sure who called who, but I called him and told him we were cleared through the Division of Field Services. He also told me that we are cleared on his end. The approval requests have been approved.
And do you know approximately what time of day it was that you had that second conversation with Lieutenant Tully?
It's probably about 4:15 because we sent out an alert to our team at 3:48 telling them that we were authorized to respond to Canton.
And as far as your team was concerned, can you speak a bit about sort of that process as far as the response and who was to respond and how you were able to sort of pull together the bodies to respond?
So CERT is broken up. We're geographically dispersed across the state. So we have an East team, West team. I had reached out to a supervisor from the West team, someone I knew who I wouldn't request to drive that far in the snowy conditions to set up a roster for. So he sent out an alert to the team at 2:53, requesting an availability list. I told him to just confirm that the people responding either had a truck or some kind of four-wheel drive vehicle to respond.
And where were... Was it that you were told, or where did you eventually respond to?
Lieutenant Tully told us that we were going to 34 Fairview Road in Canton.
And from the time that you cleared your driveway and secured response from your higher-ups, what time was it that you left, or how long did it take you to get from your home to 34 Fairview?
Well, like I stated, the alert went out authorizing the team to start responding at 3:48. I got the exact address via text from Lieutenant Tully at 4:10. We sent out another alert message at 4:17, just reminding people to bring shovels, brooms, rakes, etc. I left my house at 4:13 in the afternoon, and I got on scene at 4:56, so it took me 43 minutes to drive there.
And from your house to that location, we came about how, absent sort of the weather, how long a drive would that go?
Probably 20 minutes, sir.
And when you respond, how many other members of your unit were able to respond to respond to the scene?
Initially, we dispatched 8 members, including myself. Only 7 of us made it to the scene. One of the members could not get off his street. The end of his street had been plowed in by his town, and he had called his town DPW to try to get some assistance, but he was not able to make it to the scene. So we only had 7, again, after we initially started 8, which did kind of shift some of the dynamics of how we ran the search on scene.
And getting to that at a moment, when you first arrived on scene, weren't anyone else preceded your arrival? Who was on scene with that?
Just one other trooper from CERT, Trooper Jay Bousselet, was on scene. I believe he arrived 2 minutes prior to my arrival.
Could you say that name again and spell it for us,
please? Yes, sir. It's Trooper Jason Bousselet. It's B-E-A-U-S-O-L-E-I-L.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Lieutenant Rao, when you arrived on scene, where did you park in relation to the house, or where was Trooper Bousselet in relation to
that? Trooper Bousselet was just past the driveway of the house, so just north of the driveway. I parked almost at the end of the driveway of 34 Fairview.
And you recall, at some point, your attention was directed to an area with a high pole and fire hydrant, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And do you recall which direction either or both of your vehicle and Bousselet's vehicle were facing when you parked in that area of the driveway?
We were facing away from the flagpole originally. Eventually, we moved Trooper Busla his vehicle back towards the flagpole. Just we wanted some extra headlights to light up the scene, the area we would be working in.
Now, Lieutenant Tully, was he on scene when you arrived?
He was not.
And at some point, did you reach out to him?
Yes, I gave him a call. He stated he was just leaving Canton PD, would be on scene in about 5 minutes. That was probably around 5 o'clock.
Now, as far as the house that you were parked in front of and as far as the residences on that street, who, if anyone else, as far as neighbors or anything like that, or people from the house did you see outside the house while at any point in time?
We didn't see anyone outside the houses. A resident of 34 Fairview exited briefly after we were first on scene, but that was the only person we saw.
And exited and came down to where you were, or where did that
person? No, he was, if you look at the house, there's, you can consider two front doors, one on the, one closer to the garage, which would maybe be a mudroom or a den. Adult male exited from that door, had a hooded sweatshirt on. He asked us if we were here for what had happened earlier. We said yes, and he walked back inside the house.
Now, as far as the, you mentioned a bit about the snow, as far as the roadway conditions of the area where you were in, what, if anything, did you know or observe in regard to the roadway and sort of how it had been treated, the plow prior to your arrival?
The plow had really only cleared the center of the road. There was a good 3 to 4 foot snow drift coming off each side of the road, so maybe enough for two vehicles to pass, but not cleared, cleared curb to curb.
And as far as Lieutenant Tully arriving on scene around 5, at some point did he, what if anything, where did he direct?
He had instructed us that the death investigation involved a motor vehicle. He told us where the motor vehicle was believed to have been parked and wanted us to search from that area south towards the flagpole fire hydrant.
Now, as far as this type of search was concerned, had you, what, if any, experience did you have doing this type of search in blizzard conditions?
In blizzard conditions, we've really never done evidence searches like this. We've done missing person searches we've gone out to, but for evidence searches, nothing like this. Something, if a scene could be secured, we really wouldn't respond in a situation like this unless we really needed to.
Now, as far as the search that your team does, if you could, is it typical or is it not typical as far as conducting a search of an area that had already been gone over by another agency or by someone else within the state?
Yeah, we're a stage two response, so pretty much every search we've ever done has been previously searched. We're never really the first person to search an area.
And can you describe sort of, the difference between what you do as far as searching is concerned and sort of looking or making observations or things of that?
Well, I think our training is a lot different than maybe the regular patrolman or trooper responding. There's not much training provided anymore in the academies. So we do extensive training through a lot of the search and rescue groups that we're a part of, which would be the National Association for Search and Rescue, which is NASAR. We do search and rescue initial actions. We do line searching, managing lost person incidents. We do multiple trainings a month with a team, which is different than what other personnel would get. I think traditionally, looking back to even my time before I was a member of CERT, a search would be, you go this way, I'll go that way. There was really no methodical approach to the search.
And as far as your training is concerned, as it relates to this particular search, what if any sort of methodical approach did you develop, or what did you employ in this particular search?
We gridded off or marked off the area Lieutenant Tully thought would be the best area for us to search. So we had a starting point and an end point. Once all the members got on scene, we set up a line search, or what we would call a grid search, which again would just be a slow, methodical search with all of us working in unison, moving through the area.
And about how big an area was it that you initially sort of set out to search?
It was just over 50 feet, I believe, from the front door, which is the left door, looking at the house from the street to the fire hydrant. I believe it was 59 feet.
Was that length or width?
That is length.
as far as the width of the area that you'll be searching, about what kind of area are you searching?
It's about 3 to 4 feet was the snowdrift coming off the curb.
Now, as far as the information that you received prior to conducting the search, were there any items that were specifically identified as far as items that you might be looking for, or what, if anything, was given to you in relation to that?
Yeah, Lieutenant Tully had informed us that the victim, in this case, was struck by a vehicle. He believed there would be broken pieces of taillight in the area. He also stated the victim was missing his sneaker. So he asked us to look, search for both of those items.
And, sir, at some point, did you ask Lieutenant Tully any questions about the vehicle in question or anything in relation to that?
After we had found one or two of the pieces with taillight, I asked him if he knew how big of how much damage was to the taillight, or if he had a photo that we could get of the taillight.
And what, if anything, did he tell you?
He told us at that time the vehicle was being towed back to Canton PD, so he did not have a photo to show us.
And at any point, did he make any reference to who was coming along with the tow at Canton PD?
He said Sergeant Buchanek and Trooper Proctor were following the vehicle back to Canton PD.
You mentioned an alert that was sent out to troopers as far as to bring certain items. Can you describe for the jury sort of the process and what kind of tools or implements you use and sort of how that search was conducted?
So like I said, we moved Trooper Boussole's vehicle to face the scene to give us some extra, use his headlights for extra lighting for the scene. All the team members also put on a headlamp, which would basically just be like a hiking headlamp. We had all had shovels. We had a couple of rakes, the smaller garden rakes, just to kind of help us sift through the snow. And I also had a small push broom to move the snow around as well.
And you mentioned sort of the headlamps and moving the vehicle as far as the headlights on the area that you were searching. What was the visibility and what was the lighting conditions around that area at that time you were conducting?
It was poor lighting. There really wasn't much as far as what we felt enough for street lighting, but with the headlamps, I mean, we had decent visibility.
So when you first arrived on the scene about 4:53 p.m. or so, was it dark out of that?
Yes, it was, sir.
And it remained dark while you were still on the scene?
Yes, sir.
And in the area that you were looking, in your testimony, there wasn't much overhead sort of ambient lighting or street lighting in that area, as far as you recall?
Nothing that really helped the search.
So the area that you were searching was in the area of the fire pit, is that correct?
We started almost directly across from the front door and moved south towards Chapman Street, towards the fire hydrant.
And to be clear, as far as the area that you were searching with shovels and the other different implements to sort of sift through the snow, where was your focus as far as the street versus the front lawn?
Our right flank was on the curb, and then we moved out across the street from there. So we were lined almost shoulder to shoulder as we moved down, as we moved south through the area we were searching.
You're primarily searching or entirely searching along the roadway, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
And as far as some point did you, through the course of sort of shoveling it and the removal of snow from that area, did you approach or come in contact with the area of grass in front of?
We did, as one of the members who was working along the curb, he did started to clear some of the grass upon the front lawn, yes, sir.
What, if any, issues did you encounter when you got this sort of grass?
It was very difficult to clear the snow. I don't think we had very good visibility in what we were moving. Even with the push broom and the rake, it was very difficult to definitively say we had cleared the lawn properly. So we didn't focus too much of our efforts on that area.
Now, you referenced that only 7 members of your unit were able to respond because one got stuck in the snow at the end of the street, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
And that had some impact as far as documentation of the scene, is that correct?
Correct. Normally on a search, if I'm the overall, as a team leader, I would run what you consider a command post or be the incident commander for CERT. I would stay behind the line and kind of document our efforts, but because this was such a small search area, it wasn't really an issue because we weren't breaking people off into teams. No one was out of my sight line, and we had multiple detectives on scene that were able to fill that role for me.
And so to that point, as far as the seven members from your unit, in addition to the seven members from your unit, who have anyone else present during the course of that?
I believe there was five other members. I believe there were only two that I recognized from the state police, so I'm not sure who the other three were. They were Canton detectives or Canton patrolmen, but they were all dressed in plain clothes.
And as far as documentation for the scene, what, if anything, was done with reference to that? By whom?
As we began to find evidence, I spoke to Lieutenant Tully and just confirmed that he was going to document everything we were recovering via photograph and evidence log.
As far as the documented photos taken by Lieutenant Tully?
Yes, they were, sir.
And the items that were photographs, were they photographs prior to anyone sort of touching them or moving them or placing them, other than what was sort of related to the search effort?
Correct. As soon as we found anything deemed as evidence, we stopped our search efforts until they were documented by Lieutenant Tully.
And in reference to your search efforts, what, if anything, of evidentiary value did you and your team locate?
I found multiple pieces of red and clear taillight.
And where were they in relation to sort of the grid or the area that you had set up?
They were on the street in between the flagpole and the fire hydrant.
And sir, in addition to the pieces of red and clear plastic, taillight that you uncovered, approximately how many pieces of that you were able to locate on that day?
I believe maybe six or seven pieces.
And how big or how small did they range in size as far as the pieces that you located?
There was three larger pieces, two red, one clear, and then a couple of smaller pieces.
In addition to the pieces of red and clear plastic taillight that were uncovered during the search process, what, if any, other items of interest were located?
We found a sneaker.
And where was that sneaker located in reference to the scene, your search efforts, and in reference to the pieces of clear and red plastic?
It was same location. Generally, it was in between the flagpole and the fire hydrant. The sneaker was flush up against the curb, and it was upside down. I think we had found one piece of taillight prior to the sneaker, and then after we found the sneaker, we found a few more additional pieces of taillight.
Now, with reference to the sneaker and each of those pieces of red and clear plastic, where were they in relation to the snow that was being dug through and by that? Where were they in relation to the crime?
Can you repeat the end of that, sir?
Sure. With reference to each of the items of evidence that you've been talking about, whether it be sneaker or the red and clear plastic, where were they in relation to the snow that you were digging into? Where were they in relation to the asphalt surface?
Close to the curb, as we started digging originally, the snowdrift, the snowpack was pretty solid from where the plow had kind of cleared to. So once we were able to move through that, we started getting into fresh, undisturbed snow, started moving through that, which was a lot easier to move at that point. And all the items we found were close to the curb.
And so my question also, sir, is sort of how deep within the snow that you were digging was each of those items?
They were all found at ground level.
And as far as the area that you were searching beyond sort of snow drifts and plowing towards the middle of the road, how would you characterize that snow as far as you observing footprints, tire tracks, or anything in that area where you were digging through and finding the site?
No, we did not see anything, sir. Like I said, it was all fresh, undisturbed snow once we got past where the plow had cleared up to.
Now, as far as this search being conducted sort of physically, you mentioned there's some sort of line that's set up, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
Can you describe to the jury sort of how that line was set up, what were the different functions of different parts of the line, and where were you in relation?
So like I stated, we had what we consider our right flank stood on the curb closest to the house, and then we moved left into the street. As we dug the snow out, it was originally inspected as they would pull their shovel out, make sure they didn't have anything in their shovel to the best of their ability. Then they would bring it out to the street. I was the left flank. They would dump it in the street, and I would sift through it at the end just to make sure there was no evidence that had come out to the street. Once I was positive nothing was in that snow, I would toss it onto the other side of the street. And we just continued that process as we moved south through that grid.
And the depth of the snow that you were digging through, how did that change, or how was that any different from sort of one portion of the section to another?
Where the plow had touched, you know, clear to, I would say that was probably about a 3+ foot in height. But as we moved into the snow itself, getting closer to the curb, that was in level with the rest of the area, what was on the front lawn, which was on the neighbor's lawn. So probably 8, maybe 18 inches of snow.
And sir, as far as this search was concerned, about how long a period of time was it that you were on the scene as far as searching, and how long a process were we talking about?
After Lieutenant Tully showed up, kind of informed us where we were going to search, we moved Trooper Boussole's vehicle at 5:20, and that's when the rest of the team started to show up, right around 5:21, 5:24. A couple other members with extended response time showed up a little bit after that, but all members were on scene by 5:41. We had already started the process before they had all arrived on scene, and we were complete by 6:15. We started to wrap up and clear the area.
And as far as the wrapping up, how was that decision arrived at, and sort of what led to that decision?
So after we found the sneaker and a couple of additional pieces of taillight, we'd moved south for, I'd say, over 5 feet, maybe closer to 8 to 10 feet, without finding any other pieces of evidence. So Lieutenant Tully and I had a conversation. He was very satisfied that we had found everything we were going to locate at that time, and we decided to suspend the search.
And what was, as far as you were concerned, with the weather conditions and everything that had gone on, or which was located at that one, what was sort of your thought process in relation to any sort of continuation of the search at some later time?
I told Lieutenant Tully, I mean, we'll do a debrief at the end. We'll go over probability of detection, how I feel, whether we would have found everything that was there. I told him that there was a good chance we did not find everything. I said if he wanted us to come back in the daylight, which give us better lighting to search, or after a couple of days, the weather was supposed to warm up, if he wanted us to come back after there was some snow melt, just to reach out to me, and we would come back.
And as far as suspending the search at that point, was that something that was your decision independent of Lieutenant Tully?
No, that was in consultation with Lieutenant Tully.
You mentioned Troopers Buchanan and Proctor, or you received information that they were following your vehicle to the station, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
At any point in time that you were on scene, did you know either Sergeant Buchanan or Trooper Proctor?
Yes, I know both of them, sir.
And at any point in time that you were on the scene, did you see either Sergeant Buchanan or Trooper Proctor in the area of Critical Fairview during the entire time you were there?
No, they were not on scene.
So the other sort of troopers that you had mentioned around, they were not there, correct?
They were not there, no, sir.
Now, as far as the securing of evidence, how was that done, generally speaking, in relation to searches that your unit conducts, and how was it done in this specific?
So we don't recover evidence. We'll stop and halt our search. Sometimes we've been waiting for crime scene to show up for 2 hours before we've continued to search. So once we found the first piece of taillight, again, I conferred with Lieutenant Tully, asked him if he was documenting it and recovering everything. He stated he was. Once we felt comfortable that he had done that properly, we then continued the search.
So once you get sort of that initial parameters as far as where and what you may be looking for from Lieutenant Tully, is Lieutenant Tully directing your search efforts in any way, shape, or form?
He is not, no.
And is that typical as far as how searches will be conducted?
Correct, yes. Yeah, they let me run the search the way I deem best.
Sir, in addition to photographs, what, if anything else, was done to document the scene?
We had one of our members use a handheld GPS, which we use a Garmin 64ST, and he marked each item we found, which we then can upload later to a map, which we did later that evening.
If you could just describe to the jury that process as far as mapping is concerned, or sort of how global positioning system or GPS is utilized in creating that.
Correct. So the Garmin GPS we use, it connects to four different satellites to give you a best range of your location. There obviously is some range error involved with GPSs, but he was able to stamp three of the items, or three pieces of the taillight, but as he was marking those items on his GPS, they kept, because they were in such close proximity, they were almost marking directly on top of each other, so he only marked three of them because it was just going to clutter the map as we continued if you were to mark all the pieces we located.
So with respect to the three pieces of taillight that were marked on the diagram, were those the larger pieces, smaller pieces, or something?
They were the larger pieces, sir.
May I approach the witness, Ron?
Yes.
Sir, I'm showing you a series of 24 photographs. Briefly, I'm going to ask you in a moment if you recognize them. What's in those photographs, sir?
Yes, sir. It's the area we searched and some of the evidence that we recovered.
Your Honor, the Commonwealth will seek to introduce and admit as the next exhibits.
Any objection, Mr. Iannetti?
There's no objection, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mark, may we approach briefly?
All right.
Oh, I'm sorry. She needs to have her attention on the marking. I'm sorry.
I have exhibit 111 through 134.
Jurors, it's very important that we keep our record straight. It will be important for you during the deliberations that we do this. Sometimes it takes a while. We're fortunate we've got such a great court reporter here to take care of this for us, but sometimes it takes a while. I caution counsel that maybe you can all work together so that we don't do this, take up any extra time. All right, do you need those photos back, Mr. Lally?
Yes, sir. Maybe we report on that, Your Honor, please.
All right.
Thank you.
Your Honor, with court's permission, may I publish those, what's just been marked as those exhibits for the jury?
Yes.
Can I approach the witness, Sean?
Yes.
What you have before you is lady before you, just click on that point on the screen if I or anyone asks you to.
Okay, thank you.
Lieutenant O'Hara, Lieutenant O'Hara, what you have up on the screen before you, is that what you have as exhibit 134? I'm sorry, 111.
Hold on, might be backwards here.
Sorry.
Yes, 111, sir.
And if you could describe to the jury, and if you using that later the corner, what if anything of significance to your therapist to go forward?
This is the flagpole in front of the house. As you move south, this appears to be one of the pieces of taillight that we recovered.
And sir, Ms. Gilman, if you could zoom back out a little. Now, as far as when you're conducting the search and when the actual searching process is ongoing, what was the weather doing while you were doing it? Is that visible in this photograph?
Yes, because of the air conditioning. So you need to speak up really loudly if you don't have a microphone in front of you.
And so, Lieutenant, during the course of the process that you're conducting this search, what was the weather doing, and is that something that you can observe in this photo?
It was still snowing, and you can see some of the snowflakes falling here by the flagpole.
As far as the wind was concerned, what was any impact did the wind have on the course of the search that you were conducting?
It was windy, but it really didn't impact how we were searching through the area.
And sir, if I could direct your attention to the next photograph on the top.
Okay.
And again, sir, what's up on the screen? Is that what you have for you?
Yes, it is.
This is sort of a different perspective of the same area that you were talking about in the last photograph. Is that correct?
Correct.
If I could have the next photograph, 113. Again, what's up on the screen? Is that what you have for you at 113?
Yes, it is.
And again, sort of a closer perspective to the piece of taillight that you were referring to. Is that correct?
Correct.
If I could have the next photograph.
Okay, you really have to speak up.
Again, Lieutenant, what's up on the screen? Is that what you have before you?
Yes, it is.
And again, a closer up image of that same piece of taillight as it was observed when you covered it.
Correct, and you can see right here to the left of the taillight, that is the molding of a shovel. So this piece of taillight was picked up by one of the team members' shovels, and as they overturned it, you can see the taillight came up as they were searching through the area. And this is kind of the markings of the shovel itself.
And the next photograph.
I didn't get that. Yeah. So we're going to have to turn the air conditioning off for this. We can't hear you at all.
The issue is I'm trying to move away from the podium.
I understand. So we need to turn the air conditioning off so that we can hear you. Yes, please.
And yes, Lieutenant, what's up on the screen? Is that what you have before you as an exit?
Yes, it is.
If you could describe to the jury what we're looking at in this.
You can see the piece of taillight that we recovered. And again, this is kind of the overturned snow from the shovel, and again, seeing the markings from the shovel from where it was overturned.
And the next photograph is going. Now, this particular piece, is this one of the larger or is this one of the smaller pieces that you were describing earlier?
This is one of the larger pieces, sir.
And as far as length, size of it, if you know, how much would you estimate it, how big it was?
Gets a couple of inches, but I didn't measure it, sir.
And Ms. Gilman, if I could have the next photograph. And Lieutenant, if you could describe to the jury sort of what is depicted or what, if anything, is significant to observe in this photo.
So this is the CERT members working through the area again, working on as a line through the grid formation. One of the things we stress is your critical separation, making sure you're close enough to each other that you won't miss a piece of evidence. If you're too far apart, you will miss that. A lot of times before searches, we will take an item of similar sized item that we're looking for and we'll space out. Because this was such a condensed search area, we just had the team members stand almost shoulder to shoulder as they searched through the area.
And the next photograph is coming. And again, sir, if you could describe to the jury sort of what we're looking at or what, if anything, of significance you're observing this
one. Maybe a little difficult to see from a distance, but right here, this is the sneaker that we recovered.
And as far as the pairing of the curving that you indicated that the sneaker was recovered in relation to, where is that?
It's flush up against the curb.
Okay. again, I'm sorry, using the laser cutter.
Oh, I apologize, sir. Right here, this would be the curbing right here.
Okay. The next photograph is going. Is there a similar, as far as this photograph is concerned, what, if anything, do you observe in that photograph? What would
you... it's a closer photo of the sneakers. Sneakers in the bottom, right down here.
And the next photograph. And again, what, if anything, are we looking at in this photograph, sir?
Again, you're looking at the sneaker. This is just a closer, zoomed-in photo. And this would be the curbing right here.
And the sneaker, as it's portrayed in this particular photograph, is that as it was when it was recovered?
Yes, sir.
The next photograph is going. The other side of that sneaker, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
And is that fit sort of in relation to the curb that you were describing earlier in your testimony?
Yes, sir. You see the curbing right here.
The next photograph. As far as the sneaker was concerned, when it's recovered, where was the snow in relation to, was it on, around, in, where was the snow in relation to?
The sneaker was completely buried. It wasn't until we started digging through the snow that we found the sneaker.
The next photograph, let's go. Yeah, this is how it was discovered, is that correct?
Correct, sir.
Or how it appeared when it was discovered?
Yes, sir.
Next photograph, let's go. Next photograph, let's go. And sir, in this photograph, if you could, using the laser pointer, draw the jury's attention to what, if anything, of significance you observed.
This is Exhibit 125. It's the photo I have in front of me. This would be, might be difficult for them to see, but this is a clear piece of the taillight right here.
Okay. And the next photograph, please. And again, sir, what is depicted in this, Exhibit 126?
See a little closer, zoomed-in version of the clear piece of taillight that was recovered.
As far as what the area of snow surrounding, did that sort of depict the depth at which that piece of clear plastic taillight was discovered?
Correct, sir.
The next photograph, 127.
A different angle of the piece of clear taillight that was recovered.
The next photograph, Exhibit 128. Sir, if you could describe to the jury what is depicted in Exhibit 128.
It's difficult to see, but there's a piece of clear taillight right here. I can see with the photo in front of me, but I'm not sure if the jurors can see it from that distance, but there is a clear piece of taillight in this location.
Next photograph, 129. Again, if you could demonstrate to the jury what, if anything, significance you observed.
Again, there's a piece of clear taillight right in this location.
Different piece of taillight than the one you were referring to previously in the prior exhibits?
Yes, sir.
Next photograph, 130. What, if anything, what are we looking at in this?
Again, there's a piece of clear taillight. Again, it might be difficult from the distance for the jurors, but it's in this location here.
Next photograph, 131. What, if anything, is depicted in Exhibit 130?
There's a larger piece of red tail light located on the ground in this location.
And the next exhibit, 132. What, if anything, are we looking at in 132?
It's a closer photo of the same piece of tail light right here located on the ground.
And the next exhibit, 133.
There's a small piece of taillight, I believe, in this location right here. It's a small piece of taillight right on the ground right here in this location.
Yes.
What's that, sir?
Do you recognize those?
Yes, I do, sir.
And what do you recognize those to be?
This is the mapping system we use to map evidence we recover.
Are those diagrams created pursuant to that mapping system?
Yes, they are.
What's contained in those diagrams is that a fair and accurate portrayal of where items were recovered in relation to various markers on scene at 34 Fairview on January 29th in the afternoon.
Yeah, the marks showing on the map, they're a little offset, but that falls in the range of error with the handheld GPSs.
May I approach again, Your
Honor? Yes.
I'm about to seek to introduce.
No objection to the maps.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Your Honor, with the court's permission, may I publish those to one in each succession to the jury?
Yes.
Now, Lieutenant O'Hara, what you have before you is the first diagram, 135. Is that what's up on the screen?
Yes, it is, sir.
And you mentioned something earlier in your testimony just now in regard to sort of items being found in close proximity, creating some overlay with the GPS system. Is that correct?
Correct, sir.
And you mentioned range of error. Is that correct?
Correct, sir.
Can you describe what the range of error is and how that impacts sort of how it's depicted in this particular diagram?
So for GPS's, typical range of error on a clear day is up to 16 feet. Obviously, we didn't have a clear day. We had atmospheric conditions, cloudy, snowy conditions. GPSs can be affected for their range accuracy by a few different things. One is the satellite geometry. As I said before, the GPSs connect to four different satellites. You also could have signal blockage. Blockage could occur from trees, buildings, bridges. Then you have atmospheric conditions, like I mentioned, and then you have the receiver end, any issues with your receiver end, which is actually the handheld GPS. Those would be the four main issues and why you may have a little offset on your GPS readings. But again, typically under clear sky conditions would be up to 16 feet.
And so using the laser pointer, if you could direct the jury's attention to what, if any, sort of significant markers or what has been marked on this particular diagram.
I've listed as the command post, which is where my vehicle was parked. We have the address, which is the house, 34 Fairview. Then as you move further south, you'll see the first red plastic that we recovered, which again was a larger piece of red plastic. They're kind of stamped on top of each other, but you'll see the sneaker. You'll see a second red piece of plastic, and you'll see the fire hydrant all marked on the map.
Ms. Kimmel, if I could have the next diagram, please. Again, so what's up on the screen? Is that what you have before you? Exhibit 136?
Yes, it is.
And again, if you could describe to the jury sort of what we're looking at in this diagram or what, if anything, is different between 136 and 135.
We just changed the layering on the map just to make it a little easier to read, so we remove the taillight pieces, and now we just have the sneaker and the fire hydrant listed on the map here.
And that area, as far as you were talking, sort of the concentration of the search was in the area of the flagpole and the fire hydrant, is that correct?
Correct, sir. We started closer to almost directly across from the front door. the evidence recovery all happened between the flagpole and the fire hydrant.
And if you could, or if it's possible on this diagram that you have up on the screen, could you, using a laser pointer, direct the jury's attention to sort of where the search began and where the items of evidence were located?
Search would have begun right in this area. And as we moved south, we started finding pieces of evidence right around here.
And then the area that you went, about 5 or somewhere between 5 to 10 feet, is that your testimony beyond when you started to not find any more items of evidentiary value? Is that correct?
Correct. We had gone past the fire hydrant, hadn't found any other pieces of evidence for probably closer to 8 to 10 feet, and that's when we suspended the search.
And sir, just using that laser pointer, if you could direct the jury's attention to that 8 to 10 feet, in which direction was that from the items of evidence?
Heading south towards Chapman Street, so down in this location would be where we stopped.
Thank you, sir. Your Honor, may I approach this retreat?
Yes.
Now, sir, at any point in time that you were on scene, were you able to look at or see any sort of photographs or any images of the damage to the taillight?
No, I was not.
So fair to say that at the time that you're conducting your search on that particular afternoon, you weren't aware of how much taillight could be there or how much you might be looking for, correct?
Correct. We did not know how much damage there was.
Now, so you talked a little bit about, let me ask you this, as far as from your training and experience in relation to conducting these types of searches, are you familiar with a term known as POD?
Correct, so that'll be probability of detection.
And I believe you've referenced earlier in your testimony some variables that go into that terminology, is that correct?
Correct.
And can you describe to the jury sort of what some of those variables are and how it related to this particular search?
So probability of detection, it winds up turning into a mathematical formula to make it simpler, give us more of a baseline objective on how well we did search in the area. Covers 10 different categories. We'll rate those categories 1 through 10 on how we feel we did and kind of come up with a score to give just a baseline on what we think percentage-wise we would have found the objects we're looking for. Those categories would include the terrain, any as number one, hazards would be 2, lighting would be 3, weather would be 4, vegetation would be 5, which in this case would have been some of the grass we encountered as we got on the front lawn. As you continue on would be your spacing, which is how the team members are separated as we're searching through the area, the tactics you're using, the area size, then the team composition, and then the last one is instinct and variables. And really the last two, I think, is what works best for us. What stands out most about our team is your team composition and the instincts, just for the experience we have in searching.
And so was it those variables that sort of led to the conclusion in conjunction yourself and Lieutenant Tully as far as to cease searching at that particular point after you had gone 8 to 10 feet south of the evidentiary items without locating any other evidentiary items?
Correct, sir.
Thank you. I have no further questions of this witness. Thank you, sir.
All right. Cross-examination.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Lieutenant.
Morning, sir.
Sir, so you will agree with me that it was Lieutenant Brian Tully who first called you at 2:32 p.m. to ask that your team come out for an evidence search?
That's correct, sir.
And you knew at that time that Lieutenant Tully was he was in charge of the Norfolk County State Police Detectives Unit, correct?
Correct, sir.
Attached to the Norfolk County DA's office, correct?
Correct, sir.
And you also knew Trooper Michael Proctor at that time?
I knew who he is, yes, sir.
And you knew that Trooper Michael Proctor was in the same unit as Lieutenant Tully, correct?
I don't know if I knew he was assigned to that office. I'm not sure where he was assigned, sir.
You've since found out that he is.
Correct, sir.
Now, you told Lieutenant Tully during that phone call at 2:32 p.m. that you would make your team available that day, correct?
Yes, sir.
But at that point in time, Lieutenant Tully specifically held you up, right? Because he didn't have authorization yet?
Objection.
Is that true?
It's not.
Okay. He told you that he did not have the green light, correct?
He had not requested official response from SIR at that time.
Okay. So you were not authorized to respond at that time, correct?
No, neither one of us are allowed to dispatch my team. We have to send up formal requests to get authorization to respond.
All right. Now, by 2:32 p.m. on January 29th, when you first spoke to Lieutenant Tully, snow had been falling consistently in Canton since the early hours, correct? The early morning hours?
I would assume so, yes, sir. It was at my house.
I'm sorry?
It was at my house, so I would assume so, yes, sir.
But you lived in Massachusetts at that
correct.
Time, right?
Correct, yes, I did, sir.
And you weren't hours away when you were contacted by Lieutenant Tully, correct?
I was not, no.
All right. Now, you were aware that John O'Keefe's body was found on Brian Albert's lawn at 6:03 that morning?
I believe when I spoke to Lieutenant Tully, he told me around 6:30.
Okay. Well, let's go with 6:30 then.
Okay.
So when you received the call from Lieutenant Tully, snow would have been accumulated from 6:30 a.m. approximately to approximately 2:38 p.m., correct?
Yes, sir.
And so snow had been accumulating at that point when you first got the call for about 8 hours after the body was found, correct?
Correct, sir.
Now, before you conduct a search, is it important for you to know in general terms the working theory of the police and the investigators in terms of what had happened at the scene?
It's not. I want as detailed information on what we're looking for as far as the investigation's concerned. That's not interesting to me. I'm not interested in that, those exact specifics. I just want to know where you would like us to search and what you need us to find.
Right, but in order to know what you are seeking to find, you'd need to learn from the investigators what they believed happened that would leave that evidence, correct?
Correct, sir. He told us we were looking for pieces of taillight from a vehicle.
All right. You'd also want to know, prior to getting to the scene, who had access to the scene before you got there, would you not?
I did not need to know that information, no, sir. And I did not ask that.
All right. Is it important to maintain the integrity of a crime scene before it's searched or processed?
Sometimes, but a lot of times when we're involved in searches, we might not be out for days later. If search efforts have been exhausted and they don't think any evidence can be recovered, we will go out to scenes that have been left unsecured for days on end.
Sure. No, I understand that, but that wasn't my question. My question was, is it important to maintain the integrity of a crime scene before it's searched or processed?
No, you can leave it unattended if you don't believe it'll be disturbed or anything will be taken, sir.
Is it preferable to leave a crime scene unattended prior to searching it?
No, I think they would have searched it before we arrived, yes, sir.
Again, I'm going to ask if you would. Please just respond
What my preference would be, sir, yes, I'd prefer that it was secured.
Okay. That wasn't very difficult.
Apologize on the
objection, Your Honor.
So, no comments, Ms. Giannetti.
At the time that Lieutenant Tully first called you, were you aware that no one from law enforcement was controlling that crime scene?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
I was not aware of that, no, sir.
Were you aware at that time that no one had been controlling it for about 6 or 7 hours before you were called?
I was not aware of that, sir.
Were you aware that the scene had been abandoned by the police and investigators at about 7:50 in the morning?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
I was not aware of that, sir.
Were you aware that the scene was left open to the public for hours before you were asked to search?
I was not aware of that.
All right. In any case, when you got there, there was only one trooper on scene, and that was a trooper from your unit?
Correct, sir.
Beausoleil?
Correct.
Nobody else was guarding the crime scene at that point, correct?
There was not.
In fact, at that point, did you know where specifically on the property you were going to be searching?
I did not.
And in your experience, is it proper procedure in an investigation that requires a search for law enforcement to give up control of the area that will be searched?
It's not unusual for us to respond to scenes like that, sir.
It happens, but is it proper procedure, sir, to give up control of an area to be searched prior to the search?
If they don't think anything will be recovered in the meantime, sir, it's something we encounter all the time on our searches.
Right. So in this case, is it your testimony then that the investigators didn't think that anything would be recovered?
Objection.
I'll sustain the objection.
All right. Well, you recorded that there was a second alert regarding this case at 2:53 p.m., correct?
That was the initial alert, sir.
Maybe we're getting into semantics here, but you were first notified at 2:32 p.m. by Lieutenant Tully, correct?
That's him calling me. The 2:53 alert is sent out to my full team.
Okay. That 2:53 alert is the second time that you're receiving information about this case, right? The first being 2:32 from Lieutenant Tully.
No, that's not new information. That's me taking the information I received from Lieutenant Tully and sending it out to the rest of my team. Okay. They were not aware of the circumstances yet.
So you were the one to send out that second alert, or that alert?
The West team supervisor, because I was going to start clearing my driveway, so I reached out to a West team supervisor. He sent out that alert.
And who was that?
That was then-Sergeant, now-Lieutenant Simpson.
And the alert that Sergeant Simpson sent out was an instruction for members of your team to begin clearing off their cruisers and their driveways to get ready to go, correct?
That was an availability of alert to see who would be available to respond.
And that they should begin clearing off their cruisers and driveways, correct?
Yes, so they would be able to respond.
All right. But your team was still not activated at that point, correct?
Correct.
In fact, Sergeant Simpson explicitly wrote in that alert, quote, "We do not have the green light yet," end quote, correct?
Correct, sir.
Sergeant Simpson at 2:53 p.m. in that alert actually typed it in twice that your team did not have the green light, correct?
Correct. It's a voice generator response that will normally duplicate the instructions, so as they listen to it, if they miss it the first time through, they can hopefully hear it clearly the second time through.
Okay. And it was very clear that you didn't have the green light from that alert, correct?
Correct, so we weren't authorized to respond yet.
Okay. Now, you stated that you were in Massachusetts at the time you were first contacted, correct?
Yes, sir.
And how far were you from Canton?
Normally would be about a 20-minute ride.
All right. With the blizzard conditions, however, it took you longer than that?
43 minutes, sir.
Now, you're familiar with the CERT Administrative Journal extract?
The daily journal, sir?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
That recorded, and when I say that, I mean, you called it the daily journal?
Yes, sir.
All right, I'll call it the daily journal. That daily journal recorded the initial contact that you had with Lieutenant Tully at 2:32 p.m., correct?
Yes, that was entered into the daily journal.
And then the second entry was the 2:53 p.m. alert that was sent out by Sergeant Simpson, correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's in the daily journal or not, but that would be the alert, sir.
May I approach the witness, please?
Yes.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time.
With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with washablesofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with washablesofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with washablesofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.